Welcome back to the Warren County Radio Bible School. It is time to ring that school bell. Pull on the rope. Pull it harder. There you go, pull it. There's where it starts ringing. And when you hear that bell, you know it's time to go get your Bible and then come to class. And you'll do that by pulling a chair up to your radio and turn it up. And the Bible being your school book, I'll invite you now to turn to the book of Zephaniah. And you'll find that among the old prophets, among the minor prophets. And so it's Zephaniah, Haggai, Zechariah, Malachi. And so don't go to Zechariah, but turn on over to Zephaniah in your Old Testament. And we'll read about the living message that Zephaniah has for us today. We're being guided through this study by a departed gospel preacher by the name of James McGill, in a book that was edited in 1977 about the living messages of the Old Testament. And James McGill has a chapter in that book called The Living Message of Zephaniah. And we'll return to that in just a moment from where we were at the last class. But while you're turning to the book of Zephaniah, I'll remind you that the Warren County Radio Bible School is brought to you by the Church of Christ at Rock Cliff. Our meeting house is located between McMinnville and Biola at the foot of Ben Lomond, just across from Mount Zion Road. We have Sunday Bible study at 9 a.m., followed by worship at 10 a.m., Sunday evening worship at 6 p.m., and Wednesday evening Bible study at 7 p.m. All are welcome to all of our assemblies. I am Bill Boyd, the preacher at Rock Cliff, and the superintendent of this radio Bible school. And I want to return to that chapter that James McGill left for us about Zephaniah and the message that he has that lives with us today. And he's talking about the Lord's coming in judgment on Judah because of their sins. But then we read this. Another characteristic of the Lord is here beautifully shown. God is concerned about every individual. He would have been willing to save even Sodom if just 10 righteous souls had been found in it. Then, even when the wicked city had to be destroyed, God made a way for Lot and his two daughters to escape. And likewise, God spared Noah and his family, just 8 souls, during the great flood that destroyed everyone else on earth. And so by reading Zephaniah, we see that though God was going to destroy Jerusalem and Judah as they were, every individual would not be destroyed because God would keep his eye out for those who were righteous and seeking after him, and they would be spared. One of the living messages of the book of Zephaniah is what it teaches about divine providence. In Zephaniah's time, people in Jerusalem had come to think that God would not intervene in the affairs of men, either to reward or punish. In their hearts they said, "The Lord will not do good, neither will he do evil." Zephaniah chapter 1 and verse 12. It may have been that the long, wicked reign of Josiah's grandfather, Manasseh, and the brief but evil reign of Josiah's father, Amon, had conditioned many people to such mistaken thinking. The truth was, however, that God would soon intervene in a terrible judgment on both Judah and once powerful Assyria, and upon several other surrounding nations. Some historians point out that God used the Scythians, who came down from what is now South Russia, to carry out his destruction. The Scythians invaded as far as Egypt, united with the Medes and with Babylon. The final capture of Jerusalem, though it was carried out by the Babylonians under King Nebuchadnezzar, it was also accomplished with the help of those Scythians. In America, during the Revolutionary War period, it was fashionable among some of the citizens to claim to be deists. The main tenet of deism was the very same falsehood that was believed in Jerusalem in the days of Zephaniah, that the Lord would not in any way intervene in the affairs of man. Thomas Paine was the most outspoken advocate of this view in America. His claim was that God is too great to be the least interested in what was taking place on this little planet Earth. He said that any man was egotistical to think that God could be bothered with hearing his prayers. David raised the same question long ago. What is man, that thou art mindful of him? In the 8th Psalm and verse 4. Then David answered that God is mindful of man and has crowned him with glory and honor. The 8th Psalm and verse 5. It should be noted that some historians have falsely charged the leaders of Paine's generation with sharing his deistic views. To the contrary, Thomas Jefferson said as he closed the Declaration of Independence with a firm reliance on the protection of divine providence. George Washington said, "Providence has always been my only reliance, for all other resources seem to have failed us." Benjamin Franklin was responsible for opening the deliberative sessions of the American statesmen in Philadelphia with prayer. He said, "If a sparrow cannot fall to the ground without his voice, is it probable that an empire can rise without his aid?" However mistaken Washington, Franklin, and Jefferson may have been in some other ways, a belief in divine providence was not one of their errors. Chinese Communist Party Chairman Mao Zedong ruled over more people than any other leader in all the world's history. Yet though he was supposed to be an atheist, shortly before his death he was quoted as saying, "I must soon go home to God." Although he ruled 850 million people, Mao realized that he was utterly powerless to prolong that reign for a single hour. As the king of Babylon learned long ago, "The Most High ruleth in the kingdom of men, and giveth it to whomsoever he will." Daniel chapter 4 and verse 17. Today, each Christian who believes in prayer also believes in the providence of God. Though God will not perform a miracle in answer to prayer, nor do anything else contrary to his will, he nevertheless answers prayers just as surely as he answered Nineveh's prayer long ago. Nehemiah's prayer long ago in Nehemiah chapter 1. But if a child of God today prays for wisdom, for example, not believing that the Lord will grant that petition, James declares that person to be a double-minded man, unstable in all his ways, James 1 and verse 8. He also says, "Let not that man think he shall receive anything of the Lord," James 1. And verse 7, another of the living messages we will have as we see and study this book of Zephaniah is that wealth cannot save. Zephaniah makes a point of stressing that in his day the Lord's wrath, neither their silver nor their gold shall be able to deliver them, Zephaniah 1 and verse 18. Money then is now could buy many things. Even in the New Testament, there are warnings of those of our age not to trust in riches. The destruction that was to come upon Jerusalem, silver and gold, would not be able to buy protection, neither will it do so in the final great judgment day. We learn something about the heathen nations in Zephaniah. The heathen nations around Judah were also to experience the judgment of God against them. These included Philistia, Moab, Ammon, and Ethiopia, Zephaniah chapter 2, verses 4 through 12. Nineveh, the capital of the great Assyrian Empire, was to be made a desolation, Zephaniah 2, 13 through 15. Zephaniah, in this passage, is the last writer to ever speak of Nineveh as an existing city. Destruction came to Nineveh about 607 B.C., just a few years after Zephaniah had predicted it. The destruction of the great city of Nineveh was so complete that for many centuries, even the location of it remained unknown until relatively recent extensive excavations. Zephaniah points out the arrogance of the city. This is the city that said in her heart, I am, and there is none beside me. Zephaniah 2:15. We read in Proverbs 16 in verse 18, pride goeth before destruction. Jonah is famous in inspired history for his successful preaching in Nineveh. Even though he went very reluctantly and was not happy about his success afterward, his preaching saved the city at that time. God's announcement was, yet 40 days, and Nineveh shall be overthrown. Jonah chapter 3 and verse 4. Hearing this, the people turned from their evil way, and the city was spared. Jonah 3 and verse 10. Some people have tried to belittle the success of Jonah, pointing out the effects of his preaching were only temporary, and saying that God eventually had to destroy Nineveh anyway. But it should be noted to Jonah's credit that perhaps up to 200 years intervened between his preaching and Nineveh's destruction. It seemed that anyone whose preaching was forceful and effective enough to result in sparing a great city for 2 centuries, when otherwise it might have been destroyed in 40 days, deserved much commendation. And then Jerusalem is described in the book of Zephaniah. Zephaniah turns back from his description of God's judgment upon the heathen nations to speak in scathing terms of moral conditions in Jerusalem. It was bad enough that the princes and the judges were corrupt, but that is not all. Even prophets and priests were involved in great sinfulness. Zephaniah calls Jerusalem's false prophets light and treacherous persons. He says the priests have done violence to the law. Zephaniah chapter 3 and verse 4. We remember that it was the religious power structure of Jerusalem that was most determined to put Jesus to death. What about the prominent theologians and seminarians of today that the world looks upon as religious leaders? Is it not still often a case of the blind leading the blind? There's hope for the future in the book of Zephaniah. God's ability to see future events clearly is a truth vividly illustrated through his prophet Zephaniah. The inspired prophet looks beyond the destruction in the immediate future time, when a surviving remnant will have great reason to rejoice. In the closing verse of Zephaniah 3 and verse 20, God through Zephaniah promised Judah's return from captivity even before the Babylonian captivity began. Zephaniah speaks of the honesty and security of this remnant of Israel, the trust of their God, of their singing for joy, and of God's rejoicing with them. Zephaniah 3, verses 13 and 17. Zephaniah foresees the unity and humility with which they will then serve the Lord after returning from captivity. After returning from captivity, Judah never again seemed to be tempted to worship idols. One of the characteristics of this same remnant was a pure language with which to call upon the name of the Lord. In every age, God has been concerned with this important matter. Yet it has repeatedly happened that the people of God have been so influenced by those around them that they develop a mixed speech. Nehemiah observed, in those days also I saw Jews that had married wives of Ashdod, of Ammon, and Moab, and their children spake half the speech of Ashdod, and could not speak the Jews' language. Nehemiah 13:23-24. In the Christian age, Paul said, hold fast the form of sound words, 2 Timothy 1:13. And Peter commanded, if any man speak, let him speak as the oracles of God. We'll continue this study in the next class.